Would you be seated, please? Well, it didn't get called the Golden Rule until the 18th century. But clearly, since here we have it on the lips of Jesus, it's a lot older than that. Indeed, Jesus was by no means the first to cite it. It existed in various forms, and it has been repeated in various forms from earliest times. But what is remarkable in the teaching of Jesus is how far he is willing to push this golden rule, the new height to which he takes its demands. I can remember as a six-year-old what I now recall as my first ever introduction to abstract ethical discourse, a conversation about principles. Now, if this conversation came about because I had just walloped my bratty 2.5-year-old sister, well, I have happily forgotten that point. I do remember that my mother didn't quite seem to think I was getting her point when I repeated my new rule of thumb for fair play and world justice as, "Do unto others as they do unto you." Now, I wish I could honestly say that when I was a child, I reasoned as a child. But the truth is that my juvenile misconstruction of the real golden rule has its adult equivalents everywhere. It isn't all that far off that other favorite maxim, you get what you deserve, is it? Or monkey see, monkey do. Indeed, it has its biblical equivalent in the old lex talionis, the law of retaliation. So a life for a life, an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. The list is that long and that precise in Exodus 21. And further, while we need to remember, we do need to remember that such retributive justice sounds positively barbaric to our modern sensibilities. In its time, it represented a huge restraint upon unlimited revenge. The point was that she could only take one life for one life lost. You couldn't take a life at all if all you had lost was your eye. Now that I think of it, despite her own sense of failure, my mother may have advanced the cause of justice in the Tucker household farther than she imagined. Do unto others as they do unto you beats punching your sister's lights out if all she did was pinch your sand bucket. Now there's another redaction of the Golden Rule, and it's illustrated by a famous story of Rabbi Ben Hillel, who was an older contemporary of Jesus. Hillel was apparently challenged to recite the whole of the law while standing on one leg. Accordingly, and I can't do this because my balance stinks, but accordingly, he balanced himself on one foot and said, "What is hateful to you, do not do to anyone else. That is the whole law, and all the rest is commentary." Well, that is clearly a giant step forward, since presumably it will preempt quite a lot of distasteful behaviors, such as extracting people's teeth and their eyes and so on. But it hardly constitutes a positive moral program. To quote G.B. Caird, who's a well-known, I think no longer with us, New Testament scholar. He says this, an ethical program which consists in not doing, especially when it has to be expounded with a vast commentary, five books worth of rules and ceremonies, can hardly be compared with one which calls for positive and unlimited benevolence. So Hillel's dictum will keep me out of my neighbor's hair. I'm not going to let my dog perform on his lawn, and I'm not going to run my lawnmower before 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, but that's not the same thing as being a good neighbor. It isn't to sit with Janet, who is dying, so that Charles can have a break. It isn't to clear Willard's eavesdrop while I'm up there. What Jesus says is, do to others as you would have them do to you. So this is a command that moves beyond what is merely right or what is not wrong or hateful to what is actually good. Not just what evil shall I avoid, but what good shall I do. And here is a command, moreover, which requires a fair amount of imagination. I mean, what, in fact, would I want if I were in so-and-so's shoes? For that is what I shall offer. Do you see how Jesus has elevated this conversation to a whole new plane? But that's not all, because did you notice that the context in which Jesus offers this teaching is not as advice for folks who know and love each other well. He's talking about the proper treatment of your enemies. If you remember, he says, but I say to you that listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. Do to others as you would have them do to you. Now that, I think, raises the stakes significantly. Doing for my best friend as I would have him do for me is pretty near a cinch. After all, I like my best friend, and often enough, what would please me would please him. Caring for my friends isn't all that difficult. But to offer the same loving concern to those who wish me ill or who just plain bug me, not that anybody does, that's another matter. That is what Jesus enjoins upon us. To do unto others in this context is more difficult on the one hand because it's enormously difficult, we know this, to rise above our indignation when we have sustained gratuitous injury. To do unto others when the other is my enemy is to decline to be taught by the actions of my opponent. It's to refuse to be dragged down into a conflict which is unworthy and retaliatory. There's that word again. Jesus has laid down this law in the hardest of circumstances. And what he asks is all the harder because by definition, I don't really understand my enemy. We are at odds, most likely, because what pleases me is not what pleases him or her. The act of imagination required to know what I would desire were I my enemy is sometimes larger than I am capable of. And yet, that is what Jesus demands, an uncompromising ethic of love, based on our never-ceasing attempts to identify with the other. Do unto others, says Jesus, as you would have them do to you. Or, in another one-legged summary of the law, love your neighbor as yourself. Amen.